the deaths of the children, of a child, and non-native parents receiving them. There's so many different ways that a person could acquire stock in a corporation. I don't really feel I have to go on any further about that. It's just there's so many different ways. I'm very pessimistic about the future of the Native people owning their corporation. If it's not diluted by inheritance, it'll be diluted by purchases and lawsuits and so on and so forth. The only way that I could see where we should not, the only way I see a chance of surviving is through the IRA or traditional councils playing a part in the corporation. Now, when I say that, I thought about this for quite some time when trying to find the magic answer for all the problems that the corporations are going through or is going to go through. And there has to be, in Tyonek's situation, now there's lots of other villages that are different from Tyonek's, but I'm talking about Tyonek's, and it's where the IRA, we have a perpetual membership in our IRA government. Each child is eligible to become a member once he's born. Like all my kids are members of the tribal government at present. Now, if we're to get any kind of participation in the corporation, in ways of actually doing good for the people, is that if the IRA government get 51% or more control of the profit corporation. That way all the afterborns and so on and so forth would be eligible to be participate in a corporation. We've had a company that, by the way, we recently sold a corporation. We had 58% in it, a state corporation. And by buying into that corporation back in the 60s, we've, by buying into it, and we had 57% control over it, all of our tribal members were a part of that organization. And then we, you know, sold it or did whatever we wanted with it, but we had control over it. And there has to be, and that's one way that I see that the tribal governments could have in the corporation. The corporation in itself is not a bad thing to have, but there is a lot of human problems that we, the town people, cannot accept readily, is because number one, we don't have no individual land ownership like everybody was led to be. It's just like a corporation, like General Motors, for example. If you own stock in General Motors, you can't walk in there and drive off one of their cars. It's the same. Same thing with us. We can't walk over here and put a land on our house on our land or something. And so that's a big fallacy or whatever you want to call it that a lot of people perceive that we own the land. What it is our corporation owns the land. Sure, we elect the board of directors. I sit on the board of directors myself. However, there's certain things you have to follow in a profit corporation. And a lot of those rules of the game don't allow you to get involved into the social and political aspects of the Native people that the Native people so much expects from a corporation. And in order to make it Native and keep it Native is to allow the tribal governments to own a controlling interest in the corporation. I don't have the answers on how to buy into the corporation, but that's one thing that I would suggest, is that the tribal governments participate in the corporation by a controlling interest. We've another problem that I see with the corporations is before the land claims, the tribal government had sold ownership of the subsurface and surface rights of the former reservation. We started a, a power generating plant, of which was supposed to provide power to the whole west side of Cook Inlet and all the oil rigs and so on and so forth out in the inlet and around the west side area. One means we used to power the system was to drill a hole in the ground and use the natural gas that came out of it to run our power plant. Well, it went on for years, and we had electricity and everything provided to the village, and there was no charge to village members. It was just running on natural gas out of the ground. So after the land claims, you know, the subsurface rights went to the regional corporation. Under the regional corporation is just like the village corporation. It's a state chartered organization. So therefore, and there's, you know, 6,000 some people that belongs to our regional corporation, and just by that number, not every one of them is Tionic people. Right? They're from basically, I think, they're from all over Alaska, the people that belongs to Cook Inlet region. So we would naturally not be afforded the generosity that we came to expect previously. We no longer own our generating plant because it the well collapsed, and we sold it to Chugach Electric, which is now up there in Beluga. But the chances of us ever doing that again, of hooking ourselves up to natural gas for the whole village to share because it's ours, or used to be ours, is no longer there. So that's another thing that really took a lot away from us. There's more and more concern on Native hire. The corporations are hiring more and more non-Natives and leaving the Natives unemployed. One of the biggest excuses, well, we have union contracts. We have agreements. We cannot look out for the social well-being of our stockholders. Our biggest purpose in life is to make a profit regardless how we do it. And to me, that's a darn shame that the native corporations, of which is belongs to the native people, cannot provide adequate means of employing shareholders. Many of them are afraid of lawsuits and ways of discrimination. They're afraid of hindering profits, and they're afraid of mismanagement. They're afraid of so on and so forth. They're basically afraid to do anything for their shareholders. And there needs to be, the Native people needs to be more educated about the structures of a profit, state chartered profit corporation, so that they could become more vocal in the way things are. I have noticed many Native people disassociate themselves with the village profit corporations, and a lot of them turn their proxies in for the sake of receiving a door prize, not knowing exactly what the proxies, what all involves a proxy when you give a person a proxy. For example, in one corporation that I'm really familiar with, is that people assumed that they were giving their proxies for for the election of a board of directors. And that's what most Native people think in terms of giving proxies. They think it's a vote for electing a board of director. Well, once these certain board of directors received all the proxies, they turned around and put out some advisory votes on what they wanted to do. And the result, they used all the people's proxies that was submitted, turn around to vote what they wanted in there. And that's just one example of people not knowing about what is all involved in proxies. To give a proxy is to give your power of attorney for a person to act on your behalf, and regardless of what business turns up in a corporate meeting. So there's I could probably go on and on, but it's about all I have to say.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Standifer. Could I just ask you one question? We're holding a public roundtable in Anchorage this coming week, starting Wednesday, on 1991 and some of the problems it raises. Your idea that one way around this is for IRAs to acquire 51% controlling interest in corporations, if that could be done. I agree, solves a lot of problems. The trouble is getting from point A to point B. I certainly will throw that idea out on the table. We've got some legal experts and Native leaders from Alaska and the lower 48 coming to talk about the thing. Have you thought about how they would acquire the interest? Would they buy shares? Whose shares would they buy? Where would they get the money to pay for them?
Well, yeah, that's one thing. In our particular case, you know, we probably could do it.
The IRA here in Tayoni could buy the 51% interest in...
But one thing that would have to be taken into consideration is the fair market value. You know, all corporations, you know, you could go all the way from, you know, you could make your company look almost bankrupt at one time, and another time you can make it look almost, you know, like it's thriving. And their fair market value, I think, for a lot of Native corporations is really the most misunderstood corporation there is as far as their value of their land is concerned. I don't have no easy answers, you know. I testified earlier that I wouldn't know how to exactly go about it. I mean, you know, if there's ways, provisions in the law to allow tribal governments to buy into a corporation at a minimal amount of money or something of that nature, that I think that would be the most fair way to go about it, coming from a Native perspective. I am not at all opposed to any of my Native descendants or any of my people's descendants becoming a shareholder in my corporation at my expense. I am not opposed to that, because I perceived land claims as a Native settlement, not as a profit-making deal for me in particular.
Have you thought about the, let's suppose your IRA here in Tyonek were able to acquire 51% of the shares in the village corporation and would thus control it. It could vote its 51% of the shares according to the policy of the IRA council. So in that sense, corporate policy would reflect what the people in the village wanted. But you've still got the subsurface under the control of the regional corporation. Have you thought about whether or not there is any way in which the villages might regain control of the subsurface? I appreciate that under your scheme you'd own the surface, because you'd own the village corporation, you'd control it. But Siri would still have the subsurface. This thing is so complicated that sometimes it makes your mind snap. But any thoughts on it?
Sure. There's nothing more than I'd like to see that where the village would regain the subsurface. However, I think that's unrealistic from the point of view that not all shareholders in a Cook Inlet regional corporation are even from the Cook Inlet region area. They're from all over the state. And it would be very difficult to acquire that. But as far as the record is concerned, sure, I'd like to see the village get the subsurface back.
How many shareholders are there approximately in the village corporation here?
There's 300 in the corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was 450.
No, it's the IRA.
Sorry, is it about 300 in the village corporation?
It's
359 or 360, somewhere in there.
359 or 360, and that includes the people who've inherited shares and people who've acquired them through divorce and so on.
Yeah.
And how many people live in the village approximately?
Well, there's 276, I think, that physically lives here, but the village IRA has 450 plus people that's still being updated on the tribal. There is used to be 300, about close to 300 shareholders in TNC, but there's more and more as there. I'm talking about people, not shares. You know, as more and more people pass on and their stocks get split up, you know, there's more and more people getting into the corporation. And I think there'll be a lot more tribal members in the IRA a lot more than 450 some, because there's more and more being added on all the time. We're making a real big drive to get all the people enrolled.
There's pretty close to the last count on that tribe that was 421.
No, Slim, at his last one was 450 something plus.
No, that was a mistake.
Oh, is it?
There was an error in there, so when we added the 21 on it, it was supposed to be 421 or 22.
Oh. Okay.
Well, the number of tribal members is 420 approximately. Is
we're
that
updating the tribal roll right now, and that's as far as we got. Yeah. That's not the actual number. There are others that are still coming in that we haven't gotten. They require that you have your birth certificate and everything else with it, so there are other members that are not on the tribal roll as yet.
What does that do to us?
Like you have some that are
well
within the corporation that already have.
Yeah, the right in our own corporation, I believe at this time there's already, I think it's 5 people that do not belong to our tribal government that have inherited stock. I believe they are non-natives.
There's 2 now.
2? 2. Yeah, I stand corrected, there's 2. But I think I heard 5 somewhere, I don't know where I got it from, they're non-members or tribal government.
Maybe I could raise something else and ask some of you if you got any views on it. One of the ideas that's been floated around is that some people really want badly to sell their shares because they need the money, and that it might be a good idea to allow them to do this even before 1991. So the idea is that corporations can make an offer to their own shareholders and buy their own stockholders' shares. Nobody else could make an offer to those shareholders, just the corporation itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that proposition is being seriously considered. What has occurred to me is that in a village of 200 or 300 people, you might have 100 people who between now and 1991 might say, okay, they're offering $500 for my shares. I can use the $500 and I'll sell my shares to the corporation. After a period of years, you would have a situation in which maybe half the people in the village would be shareholders and the other half wouldn't. And it seems to me that human nature being what it is, it might only be a question of time before the people who still had shares started to say, well, the corporation policy should be that only the shareholders can use the land or go hunting or this or that. Maybe I'm wrong in making that assumption, but I don't mind saying that I think that proposal is one that people should think very hard about. But I wondered if you or Mr. Standifer or Bonnie McCord or Fred Bismarck or anybody else had any views on that or any other question. Well, I think you have.
I thought about that a lot after the 1971 kids, you know. I thought maybe if the corporations should made the offer to the kids that were born after 71. If they can afford to buy it at a set price, I think that would be the best bet. And if they can't do it, I think we should be able to have the corporation buy it. That was my feeling. I felt that way all the time, that if the kids had the money that was born after 1971, I think they should have the first option to buy. And if they can't, and then the corporation can turn around and buy it and hold it and maybe later on sell it to those kids. That was my feeling.
Could I comment on that just a little bit? one great fear I have of a corporate buyback plan is after a corporation purchased all those stocks, who would be the person to vote them? I have great concerns of if management or the board of directors have the opportunity to vote them stocks, we might have a permanent board of directors in there, regardless of what any stockholder would do or say. And there's also other things and ways of employee stock ownership programs, in ways of diluting the stockholders' interest in stocks. My answer to that is that whatever the propositions that's proposed before the Native people, they should be specifically spelled out from point A to point Z of their policy and everything else. They should let everybody know exactly what they're going to do with those stocks after they're purchased.
I'm not sure if I understand the question right, but just in what you have said, that piece of paper that says I'm a shareholder in a corporation somehow links to my also being a Native. So when you're talking about someone buying this, whether regardless of whether it's my corporation or another corporation, are they buying back my being a Native also?
I don't quite see how anybody could do that. Your blood remains what it was
before.
It does,
but then you're taking away something that kind of links me to this whole thing.
Well.
Gee, if you're going to talk about things like that, then I think we definitely need an educational class on this.
Yeah. Sorry.
If it's all right with you, I'd like to get back to where I was talking about the fishing sites. And according to the records at the Fisher hearings last spring, nobody has any rights here. The fishing sites are open now. They're talking about it, and I think if the people should lease their fishing sites so they can hang on to them. That was brought up at the Fisher hearings. And I was going to bring it up to the people, but I never did. I never did come to a general meeting where everybody was here. And maybe people should consider that, because after the Native land claims, they say we don't have any more rights or nothing. So I don't know. If the people should maybe lease their fishing sites so that nobody come in here and jump them.
Wanted to add something.
Oh, I was going to say for now, maybe that the state of Alaska don't have any jurisdiction over this part of this property over here, because of the fact that our property line goes down to low water mark, and that's quite a ways out there. So I know.
That's just what I heard at the hearing.
Yeah.
There's no record. There's no record, no place.
We have no public easement on this beach line here. Our property line goes right down to the low water mark. far as I know. So that might be the reason.
Well, that's just the way I heard at the hearing. It says we don't have any rights out there, so I don't know. Maybe somebody should look into it, because I wouldn't want to lose my fishing sites if I...
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed, every place else, that all their sites are all leased under state, except Tyonic. Third place I've been. So the reason might be because it's private property.
Well, I don't know nothing about it, but that's just what I heard at the hearing. That's all I heard. I thought I'd bring it up when they were talking about it, so.
Well, they can't say we don't have any rights over there.
Well,
they probably could, but it's not true.
I just have a question. Does the state ownership of riverbeds come up only to the low water mark or to the high water mark?
In this case, it's not a riverbed, it's an inlet.
Oh, it's an inlet.
This
I
is
see.
Our property line.
Yeah.
See that blue part right there on the map over there?
Yeah.
See, our property line goes right down to the low water mark.
Oh, and that predates ANCSA.
Right.
That's the old reservation.
10-4.
So that would make you a special case, right? All right, I follow you.
We got no easement on it, as far as I know.
Yeah. No, we were just in the Nana region all week, and there... they have found that the state ownership in the riverbeds goes to the high water mark, which means the state is establishing campsites on sandbars for people coming down the rivers for recreational purposes, and this is causing a certain amount of conflict. But I realize now we're at salt water again.
I believe we received land underneath our former reserve.
Yeah.
And our former reserve was at the low water mark, so I think that's a different case.
Yeah, thank you.
One last closing remark on the concept of buying into a corporation. One possibility is that under the Indian Financing Act, one possible way of receiving funding under that is for the government to loan the Indian tribe, reinstitute the Indian Financing Act again, loaning the Indian tribe money, and the tribal government repay it back with the dividends that comes from a corporation.
That's an interesting idea, the old revolving fund,
After all, you'd have a big security, all your land and everything would be security loan.
Well, those have been some very interesting ideas. It's been a good discussion. There are some other folks here.
I think Myra was ready with hers.
Okay.
I'm just going to read mine because...
Okay.
I just got back from Anchorage a little while ago and I didn't get things. By having these hearings, will it solve some of the problems that are facing us created by the Lands Claims Issue Act? Will our corporations listen to us, or will they keep on making important decisions without letting us know? Will it speed up the solutions to the issue of the problems facing us in 1981? Will the concerns that are voiced in all these hearings be brought to the attention of the U.S. Congress and others that will be making important decisions concerning us? When our village was involved in an important issue concerning whether we can decide who lives here, our village native corporation wouldn't support us on the issue. In fact, they were on the other side. I understand they're going to get land based on my family's headcount, and we won't get any of it at all. That doesn't leave me or my family anything hardly from the claims, especially if the corporation decides to sell the land or the stocks. We have a lot of people out of work and needing jobs. I see a lot of people in Anchorage that don't have a place to stay or food to eat. And our corporation leaders are getting big salaries. I don't believe any of the corporations tried to do anything about the homeless in Anchorage. What I'm talking about is the Native people in Anchorage that are homeless. My daughter, who is only 14 years old, became very angry when she saw a report on how much the salaries were of our corporation leaders. We haven't been educated or kept informed of the land claims at all. My children keep saying that in 1991 Taonic will be no more because anybody will be able to settle here and our culture will be no more. Our corporations have made no effort to educate our children in the land claims or the issues of what happened in 1991. I keep hearing that we need the Land Claims Issue Act changed by Congress, but how many of the original members are still in Congress that were in Congress when the Land Claims Issue Act was passed? And how many of the congressional members are familiar with the land claims issue? Is there any effort on any corporation to educate the congressional members on the land claims issue, or that we want changes? And that's all I had on that. And I wanted to say I have fears, you know, about the state taking over the stocks or the land because they help people with food stamps, AFDC, public defender, old age assistance, and foster homes by saying that, you know, we helped you and now we want your land and stocks and in 1991. And this is one way I fear the state could take over the land and we lose out.
Thank you very much. You asked, I'm just going to add something myself. You asked whether Congress would listen to what people are saying at meetings like this. Well, no one can be sure, no one can foretell the future, but this commission was established by Native people themselves. I was appointed by the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People. So nothing quite like this has been done before, but it seemed the only way to find out what ANCSA had really meant to people, you know. It seems to me that we've been traveling around the state for the best part of a year, that people are beginning to pay attention to what Native people are saying at these meetings, and I hope that it will all be helpful. The report that I write will be made public, and it'll be ready in the spring of 1985, and I will be sending it to everybody who's spoken at these meetings and to all the IRAs and corporations. And the Inuit Circumpolar Conference will be submitting my report to the United Nations, but Native people in Alaska themselves can use it to go to Congress if they wish. You said, well, there's nobody left there from 1971 who knows what this is all about. You know, that may cut both ways. Maybe it's a good thing if there aren't that many people left in Congress who were there in 1971, because if you come back and say, as you've been saying to me, this thing is a clunker, it doesn't work, at least they're not defensive, you know. They're not saying, hey, we built that machine and don't come here and tell us it doesn't work. We've also had people coming from other countries to Anchorage to talk about their land claim settlements, because since 1971, people in other countries have been making land claim settlements, and they have learned from what happened here. They, for instance, have made subsistence the main thing in their settlements, not just getting fee simple land. Because if you don't have control over subsistence over your land and over the land you need for hunting, even if that land is federally owned or state owned, then you can sit here owning all this land, but if you can't hunt on it and if you can't fish, you may not be all that far ahead. So we are going to be looking at all of those settlements in other countries, and I'll be mentioning them in my report. And you might decide that it's a good thing to bring those to the attention of Congress and say, look, life moves on, things change. We had the 1971 model, but now the 1980s are out, and we'd like you to take a look at them. In fact, at any rate, that's what I'm going to try to do out of all this.
If I'd like to comment on that a little bit. We have the subsistence people come down here and work with us. And they map out the areas we use for berry picking, hunting, clam digging. And that's been used at the fishery hearings in Anchorage. They bring their maps with them. And they says, this is Tyonic. Tyonic use this area for berry picking. They use this area for moose hunting. They go down here to Point Harriet, and they use this area for clam digging. They got it all marked out on the maps, and they always bring it up at the subsistence hearing when I'm there testifying, and it's really been helpful.
Good, thank you.
I think, Chad, you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah.
My name is Theodore Chikolushin. I'm a resident of this village. I didn't know very much about the Alaska Native Clam San Juan Act when it started coming out. But during the time of 1971, I went out to the States to go to school. And I've been out there for about 8-9 months. And this issue came up about permit holders for fishing, for going out fishing, and I was cut off for that. And then they didn't want me to have a permit because I went out to school for 8 months out there. And when I came back, and then the corporation started setting up in every meetings down here and going voting for what you want to, if you want to go for the Land Claims Act or just keep the reservation. There was a big scare about taxes and stuff like that. And everybody else went and thought it would be best just if they go water for the corporation to have protection for our land that we don't have to pay taxes on. But even during 1991, when it comes up that taxes that we're gonna have to pay and stuff like that, it's gonna be accumulate to lots of buying out their proxies and buying out their stock and stuff like that. And I don't know if the, most of these people around there that's going to be living here that will be living here in 1991 because of it, you could buy your stock out. But during 1991 when I got turned down for a permit for holding license to go fishing. And I was denied that there, and I was wondering how could I go about it to apply for this permit that they're having issuing out again, that people missed it out on in 1971 during when they were issuing all these permits. I don't know what else.
Thanks very much, Chikolushin.
I'd like to add something to that. Last week's newspaper, I got, you have the option to apply for a limited entry permit if you were turned down once before. I don't know if you, anybody here has tried it, but you have the option to do it now. And if you been turned down once before for a limited entry permit, you can apply now. I don't know how long, when the end's going to be, though.
Okay.
But what if he wasn't turned on?
You can still get one if you're fishing. The, after 1971, I think it was, or up to 72, something like that.
Even if you didn't, wasn't turned on, you still could apply?
Yeah. Try it.
No.
The flight that was supposed to be for 6 o'clock, they're asking you to leave on this next flight because the father's rolling in. You have to get out tonight. So she'll be ready to take you up
okay,
as soon as that plane gets here.
Which?
I guess they're on their way now.
That's a deer or that thing?
Well, just maybe you could turn this off and we could just discuss how